Now, of course, the
host, Angela Joyner.
I'm really glad to be here tonight, and I really appreciate all the people in the chat room or in Pal Talk. It looks like we've got about 46 so far, and it's still rolling. Now, tonight, I'm going to talk about something that I saw in Oregon in September of 2008, and I'm going to give you a little background on that now. I met... hang on just a second, folks. Okay. I met a man, and his name is Bob, and we will reveal his last name in next week's show. And I met him through Steve Allen, and there's many of you that are listening that know who Steve Allen is. He is the first man that reported the Stephenville sightings to me when I worked at the newspaper. And actually, the story that Steve was telling me was so fantastic, I really wasn't interested, but Steve has a way of getting you to do things that he wants you to do. So I went to his office, and I met this guy named Bob, and he showed me some footage, and I wasn't impressed with the footage. It was blurry. It wasn't something that I felt like, really set anything one way or the other, but he did invite me to his home, and he said, if you will just come, I will show you something. If you can spend several days with me, I can show you UFOs. And okay, well, that got my attention. So one thing that really piqued my interest is Bob said his first experience was while guiding someone on a hunting trip. Now, my husband is a hunter. You know Ricky Sorrells, most of you. You know he's a hunter. He is also one of Stephenville witnesses. And so Bob's a hunter. These guys have a way of being aware of their surroundings that most of us are not in tune with. My husband can see a jackrabbit yards away and is going, look at that jackrabbit. You see it? Now, I never see it, but hunters just have a way of doing that. So one of the things that I did before I agreed to make the trip is Bob told me, he said, I have some other people that have seen things, and I'm looking in the chat room to see if y'all are getting all this feedback to see if you can hear me, because I'm getting a lot of nasty, nasty feedback. No, they say it's good. Oh, well, somebody says there is feedback. Okay, here we go. Well, he gave me a couple of names. He said, call these people. They've been with me, and they've seen some things they can't explain either. So I did that. Now, later on tonight, you're going to meet my husband, Randall, because he was with me through the whole thing. And one of the people that I called was Jamie McDowell. And at that time, she was with a company called Pounce Productions. But now she is the founder and executive producer of Vertical Studios. She has 20 years of media experience, and she began her work as a broadcast journalist for Armed Forces Radio and television in Italy at the ripe old age of 18. She traveled extensively covering and producing the news, which included an assignment in Egypt during the Gulf War. This earned her international broadcast awards, accolades, and medals for her service. She's won Emmys and has other awards and achievements too numerous to mention with my time constraint. I suggest you look at her site, www.verticalstudios.net, for her bio. She has a journalism degree and a master's degree in business from the University of Oregon. Her roots are in Oregon, and she lives in Portland with her daughter. Welcome to the Joyner Report, Jamie.
Thank you, Angela. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's so good to talk to you again. And just to remind the listeners, you were one of the persons that I called before I ever went to Oregon. Do you remember that call in the fall of 2008?
I sure do.
Tell our audience what it was that I phoned you about.
Well, if I recall, you were looking for a little bit of verification, maybe a more objective viewpoint to what Bob had shared with you with the footage down with Mr. Allen, I believe it was. And I think you were looking for just another viewpoint, somebody who had maybe a more objective eye on it, someone who had a different experience, as any good journalist would. And
right.
You gave me a call, and you just asked me about my experiences there.
And it was basically just a call from one journalist to another, right?
Yes, it was. And
go ahead.
For your listeners, just so they kind of understand how I got involved with it, I had a business partner at the time, and he and I had talked about doing various documentaries, and we're looking into different subjects. And he had been introduced to Bob through a friend and went up one night before our venture began and photographed some of the sightings that he saw that evening with Bob. He shared that video with me back in the spring of 2008, and I have to say I was pretty intrigued. And that led me to make a phone call to Bob, and Bob invited me and a crew to go and check it out for myself and to document it. And we went up there with the intention of putting together some footage for a documentary project.
Okay. So when you were there, well, first of all, let's back up a little bit. You were a war correspondent, correct?
What's that?
You were a war correspondent in past years, right?
I was a 46 Romeo in the Army. That's what the classification was back when I was in. I was in during the Gulf War. I did some temporary assignments, and as I mentioned in my bio, one of those was out of Hurghada, Egypt. So, yeah, I was attached to Allied Forces Southern Europe at the time and did a variety of assignments during that run.
So you are not a squeamish, right? You've seen a lot.
I've seen a lot in my time, that's for sure. And it takes a lot to rattle me. I mean, anyone who's spent time in the military, and certainly, you know, the Gulf War was certainly a different war than what we're experiencing today, but it had its own challenges, and certainly its own experiences, and I would say I'm definitely not a skittish person by nature. I'm more of a curious person, just as you are. Journalists are, I think.
Now, when you went out with Bob and you were filming some things, you had some other people with you. I know you had a cameraman and a friend of Bob's. Tell our audience what you saw, what you witnessed.
Well, we went up. The first thing that we did, I brought along a cameraman with me, Jason Turner, and I brought on another person to help with the production. And we met Bob at his home, and there I was introduced to Jack Peters and Bob's friend Nathan, and we sat down and interviewed Bob on camera for 45 minutes and kind of got the lay of the land, just kind of the background as to how Bob was introduced to all of this. And I have to say I was really intrigued. At the same time, I was a little bit skeptical. I wasn't
skeptical,
sure about being experienced.
As you
were, I'm sure, you know, you don't quite know what you're going to see up there. And you never know if people are embellishing these days. But I certainly kept an open mind.
Right.
We waited until dusk, and all of us got into Bob's minivan. And as the only woman in this minivan with a lot of people I didn't know, over half of them I didn't, that made me probably a little more skeptical than anything else or a little more skittish than anything else. So we drove up quite a ways into this area that Bob was guiding us in. It's It's an area in one of Oregon's forests. And he had pulled over the car to kind of give us a briefing of sorts. Here's what you can expect to see. Here's a little safety things, you know, things like stay in groups, don't go apart, try to stay close together, that sort of thing. And
okay.
I happened at that moment to glance out the window. I was just kind of looking around and getting my bearings. And I saw something out of the corner of my eye. And I thought, God, I'm already seeing things. This is great. And so I looked away, and I was listening to Bob again. And then I looked over again out the window, and I saw something in the distance. And I don't quite know how to describe it. It wasn't a light form. It was more of sort of a hologram-looking type figure. And I signaled my guys to kind of look out the window. And Jason said, "What is that?" And I knew that I wasn't the only one who saw it. So, of course, we open up the doors of the van. I said, "Let's get out, let's get out." We ran out there and ran up to it. It was gone. And at that point, we were really curious. We set up about another mile away over a ravine of sorts. You could hear a creek down below. This was nothing but scrub, completely down a hill with just really thick, thick foliage. Lots of trees, not something that you could easily navigate through. There are no trails or entry points that we could see. So we set up on this sort of ridge looking down into a ravine where Bob said most of the sightings had happened. We were waiting with our cameras, and they were set up, and I remember noticing some lights, not in this ravine, but over to the side, and it kind of concerned me because I didn't quite know what they were. I pointed them out to Jason, and he said, "Yeah, I see them too," and I thought, that's mm-hmm. strange. So we continued to get our cameras ready. We weren't quite ready to film yet. It was still dusk, but we were setting up the cameras and getting ready. About that time, I happened to feel something in my back. It felt, honestly, like some sort of vibration. That's the best way I could describe it. And it kind of moved along from about the tailbone in my spine and kind of shot up my spine all the way to the base of my neck. And it just felt like a strange vibration. It really scared me. And I asked the guys, I said, "Did you feel that?" And they said, "No." And then all of a sudden, it's like I could feel something telling me that these lights were going to be behind us. And I turned around, and there were lights right there. And I yelled at the guys, "Look, they're behind us." About that time, Jack Peters, who was on the trip with us, pulled out a camera, a still camera, and started snapping some shots as we were fumbling to get our video cameras in that direction. And he captured a really interesting photo, which I don't know if you plan to have him on the show, but I'll let him elaborate at that point.
Okay.
We then moved our cameras back to the other direction after we looked for a while and saw nothing more. About an hour passes by, and we start to see some of the lights appear. The interesting thing is that they don't have much how do I describe it? It's almost like an optical illusion in a way. It looks like they're moving towards you, but in actuality, they're likely moving away from you. I don't know how to describe that, but you could be looking. It seems like it's away, but all of a sudden, it's brighter than it's been. We were able to capture some of the footage on camera, and it just isn't very concrete. We have top-of-the-line HD gear. I shoot on a Sony 700 series camera. Top-of-the-line broadcast camera, Fujinon lenses. It doesn't get any better than what we shoot on. And our cameras had a very difficult time picking them up. It's just darker than you wouldn't believe up there. But what we did capture was just really, it was very interesting, very, very strange, but not very large. And these lights were at a distance. It was very difficult for us to zoom in and really capture it on camera. Mm-hmm. I'll kind of share with your listeners one other thing, and then we'll go from there, but probably the biggest event of the night for me was the fact that we were standing on the ridge and photographing some of these lights, and I had one of my crew standing next to me, and he said, "Be careful, I see one coming up here on the right." Well, I have my eye on the lens, and I was focusing on another set of lights that were straight in front of me. Mm-hmm. And he said, "Nope, they're coming up on us, you need to be careful." And I said, "Well, hold on a minute, I just want to roll on these." And about that time, he said, "Look out." He reached for my shoulder, and we had a jolt or a bolt of I would call it almost electricity, shoot through the camera. The camera started blinking, and it knocked the two of us to the ground, flat out knocked the two of us to the ground. I don't know what it was. As a journalist, I tend to be skeptical, and I don't know if it is something electromagnetic, if these lights are related to something that's ball lightning. I'm sure a lot of your listeners have looked into that phenomenon. I'm not sure if it has something to do with an electromagnetic field, but I will tell you in the way that they move and the way that they appear and disappear, it's really odd to me. I can't describe it, and it almost seems to be as if they're moving in patterns.
So was it a grid pattern, or what would you call it?
The pattern that we saw in a lot of the footage and that just seemed odd was that the lights would often move together. You'd see two or three of them, and they move together in a sort of triangle pattern, like a two at a base and then one at the top. And you see a lot of these lights doing that. They kind of form together in this sort of triangle. Bob describes this, in his own words, as being a window or a portal. I'm not sure that's what it is, to be perfectly honest. I just don't know enough. But it is interesting to see how these lights move in almost always in that triangle sort of pattern.
Your footage, how did your footage turn out? I mean, you've got one of the best.
Like I said, very difficult to photograph up there and to videotape in those conditions. I don't know if many of your listeners have been to the Northwest, but our forests up here are incredibly dense. And when you have no moonlight, even more so. Now, I've gone back up there. I've been up there now 6 times to document. And I've been up there in moonlight. I've been up there in partial moonlight. I've been up there when it's pitch black. The best viewings that we get, obviously, are when it's pitch black. Our cameras, even with Fujinon lenses, top-of-the-line HD gear, have a terrible time picking up clearly on the images. We did get some interesting footage. We have some things that I just can't explain on camera. I don't quite know how to explain it. I've had other producers look at it, and no one can really tell me what they're seeing. Do we have lights really up close? No. There's just no way to get to them that I've been up there and been able to do. Like I said, a lot of these lights are kind of appearing down in ravines and in sort of these canyon areas, lots of scrub ahead of you. We've tried to go after them on a couple of the expeditions where we've tried to run through that scrub, and you just trip and fall. I mean, it's
impossible. It's impossible to get through that stuff, isn't it?
Right, exactly. And I've also, so your listeners know, I've gone up there in the daytime, and I've walked around there with my, you know, just shaking my head. How in the world, if it was, God knows what, I mean, some sort of military facility or somebody had some sort of experiment set up there, there's just no way. I've been up there. I've looked around. I don't see anything there that would give me the indication that someone would have the ability to get in there and do something. These areas, like I said, are incredibly dense.
Right. You know, you said that whatever it was, you thought it might have been a jolt of electricity that knocked out your camera and knocked you to the ground. Was that painful, like electricity?
Oh my! I have to say that I don't know if many of you have ever touched an electric fence. I grew up on a farm, so that happened a lot.
Yes, I have. I've touched one.
If you've ever touched two live wires at a time, like if you ran two wires on a hot fence. It's like about that jolt of electricity. One wire just gives you a little jolt. Two wires will give you a real hit. That's what it felt like to me in recalling it. It was an odd thing. Mostly what was painful, I think, is just being knocked to the ground and having the air knocked out of me. That was the kind of stunning thing. It felt like a shock, and so it wasn't particularly pleasant. The odd thing to note, too, for your listeners, is the fact that I just started that tape, and I was just starting to roll on it, and I was getting those lights that were ahead of me. And I will say this, that tape, when we went back and looked at it, had this sort of broken up, odd-looking pattern at the point in the tape where it was hit, where the hit happened. You can hear, we're talking, I could hear, my crew guy saying, look out, they're coming up on us, and then the tape just creates this odd pattern, and then it goes to gray. If you've seen an HD tape, a professional tape, when there's nothing on the tape, it goes to gray. The interesting thing, though, is that the tape was at the end. We don't know how that happened. Now, could the camera have just fast-forwarded? I don't know. Maybe. Honestly, the camera went crazy, and then everything shut down. It took about 10 minutes for our camera to come back up. Thank God it did. And then once it did, I didn't even want to risk putting the camera back out there at that time. Just put it in the case and called it a night for that camera. But we had another camera with us, and we also had a mini camera with us that we documented with.
Now, the lights that seemed to be in a triangle pattern, did they look, how large did they look to you? Like a golf ball, a basketball? How big were they?
Well, it's interesting that you say that. The thing about it is that they'll start out at times looking like little pin lights. It's almost like you're blinking your eyes to say, what is it? What am I looking at? And then it will kind of grow larger at times. At times, they'll kind of appear larger and then get smaller. All of them that I've seen are moving in some way. They're kind of moving around. Some have been smaller. Some have been larger. Typically, they're all about the same size when they form that pattern that I've seen and that I've documented.
How far away do you think from you? Could you tell?
I've had the lights be anywhere from about, I'd say about 35, 40 feet on out to, 200 feet. We've had them up pretty close. That point, though, when they were close, weren't particularly large in the times that I can recall that we've documented. It's really odd to describe. I just don't even quite know how to describe it unless you were there.
What color were they?
Share the same thing. We've seen variations of colors. We've seen them in green. We've seen them in blue. And we've seen them in sort of a reddish orange color. And they've been in various times of the night. They've appeared in various types of ways. And you never know what you're going to get.
It's an incredible thing. Did this experience have an adverse effect on you or anyone in the group that was with you?
Yes, it had I had a terrible time with it. It really, for me, what was most difficult was the fact that I consider myself a professional. I usually like to be able to explain things. I'm not one who doesn't like to be able to explain something. And the fact that I was the only one up there, and Bob has said he's experienced too, that actually feels something, I physically felt something. And that, to me, was probably, that was just the most disturbing for me. I've since actually talked with a therapist who specialized in post-traumatic treatment.
Right.
And have shared with her this experience. And I've really done some work to try to, I guess, alleviate myself of a lot of the effects it had on me. It was incredibly disturbing to me. and it was incredibly personal to me. And since then, I've actually, as a cathartic process, wrote this entire event from my point of view and my experience as a screenplay. And I found that to be incredibly cathartic. Incredibly cathartic.
So were you able to find a way through your counseling to help you cope with the experience?
Yes, most
definitely.
You
must have coped with it or you wouldn't be here talking to me now.
Yeah, I don't think I could have talked to you about a year ago about this time. It was a really difficult thing for me. As I mentioned to you, I've gone up 6 times. Most recently, I went up in November of 2009, and I actually took my co-writer with me, and I wanted him to experience what I had seen. And again, strange happenings, strange things. The lights are still there. Nothing had really changed, but I was able to cope with it a little bit better than I had in the past. And I will tell you, I lost a lot of sleep over it. I had a really difficult time with it. It made me very anxious for a long time.
I think that's understandable, and I think I would really want the listeners to understand, too, that you are not the typical female. I mean, you have been all over the world. You have seen really horrific things in your venue of being in Armed Forces radio and television. You're not someone that scares easily.
No.
No,
I'm not.
This really did scare you.
Yeah, it did. It really did rattle me to the core. I had a few friends in the military who, after the Gulf, had to go through post-traumatic stress therapy. I never had to do it. I wasn't to their level, obviously. Not anywhere near to that level. Trust me, I wouldn't even say that I was. But I would say, and the point to that statement is, I now understand what a traumatic event such as what I experienced can really do to a person. I don't think anything quite prepares you for that. And I really felt in a way like I was experiencing that. If the entire group had experienced it, I think that would have been more comforting to me. But the fact that they didn't, it just made it that much more difficult. I felt a little bit isolated in how I had experienced it, and actually was able to talk with Bob quite a bit about that, and that really helped me down the line.
Now, okay, let's talk about Bob. Now, what do you think, you know, of Bob as far as his character and his honesty?
I think Bob is a good man. I think that I think he's a person who's, I think he's an intelligent guy. I think that he has experienced something that has profoundly changed him. I think that he's struggled with what to do with this. Does he share it? Does he not? Should he just keep this close? Is it worth revealing to others what's going on there? I understand really why he's kept it close. I think that right there speaks to his character. I think if he'd just been someone to run out and, you know, tell the news like we often see after a big tornado, and you see the people, oh, I saw the big tornado. Bob's not that kind of person. He really
it's
has.
It's taken Bob a long time to decide to come out with this on my show and use his name. I didn't want to add to the mystery and the part of using an anonymous witness in ufology, because I think there's way too much of that. And I had told him, if you ever decide that you will use your name and you will come out and talk about it, then heck, you're on. But and so it's taken him a year and a half to decide to do that.
Mm-hmm. And I think that for Bob, since he was really, to my knowledge, the first person to really discover this sort of thing, or it found him, or however you want to put it, I think that for him, he's really burdened that responsibility, maybe more so than the average person would. And I think because of that, it's taken him a long time to sort of come to a place where he's comfortable with the idea of opening up about it. And I can say from personal experience what has happened to me, which is obviously it's different for everyone. It took me a long time to be able to talk about it again, to be able to even think about it. I couldn't look at that footage for months and months and months, just because it just rattled me so. And I think Bob could certainly relate to that.
This footage that you have, are you willing to share that in any way, or is it something you're keeping close? Or
for now, I'm keeping it close. I haven't really thought much, honestly. I think probably like Bob, I haven't thought much about sharing it. And like I said, it's taken me some time to even get to the point where I can talk about it again. I'll never say never.
Do you think that you were seeing something that could have been military experimental?
Well, I wondered that. I mean, that was my first thought, was are we in the middle of some sort of electromagnetic experiment? But I have to say that, you know, I've gone up there a few times. It's not like I just saw it one time. I've been up there a few times, and I don't think that's what's going on. And the only reason why I say that is we have seen the lights in other parts of that area, and I still am not clear in my mind how that could be. Like I said, it's scrub, it's thick. I don't know how you would do it. Of course, if it's a military type thing, that's entirely possible. The military do amazing things. The men and women in the military do things that would just blow our minds. But I do think there's something more there. It seems like it's something more.
Do you feel that what you saw was under some sort of intelligent control?
I know this, that when I felt the vibration in my back, and I've felt it since when I've gone up there, and I'm just like, I'll be standing there, I feel the vibration in my back, and I can look, and I'll just say, the lights are going to be over there, and about 10 seconds later, 15 seconds later, there they are. How does that happen? How do you explain that? That's the thing that has just really rattled me, because I thought, why would I know that? Why would I be compelled to look in a certain direction and have that happen? I have no explanation.
I mean, they're moving at some sort of lightning speed. Is that what you're saying?
No, it's not that. It's almost like they just appear. It's not that they're moving in or moving out. They just kind of appear. That I have no explanation for, ladies and gentlemen. I don't know.
Well, what exactly shook you to your core? Was it the experience of having the electrical, what appeared to be an electrical jolt, knock you to the ground? I mean, that would shock me to my core.
Well, it was in part that the vibration in my back, as I mentioned, was odd. The fact that I could look over and say the lights are going to be here, and they were. Odd and strange noises when we're out there. Now, you could argue that we're in the woods. Of course, you're going to hear odd and strange noises. But these just, I've done a lot of camping in my time. I don't buy it. They just don't seem like sounds you hear in the woods. And what I'm talking about is large, like, clanging noises and sort of.
Large what kind of noise?
It's almost like a bashing together two trees or another one that I've heard out there a couple of times now, sort of an industrial sound, like a hammer coming down on steel. It's odd. And the sounds don't happen all the time. I've experienced them a couple of times, and we've never been able to capture that on camera. The sounds, for whatever reason, never come through on the camera.
Do you think what you were observing was extraterrestrial in nature?
I don't know. I tend to think of extraterrestrial as like everybody else. I mean, I grew up watching Close Encounters and E.T. and some wonderful things that Hollywood's done to that vein. I don't know. I don't think I know enough about that to decide what really is that. I mean, it could be anything. It could appear in any form, and maybe we're just not prepared to understand it that way. The other thing I'd like to share with your listeners, chew that in. I don't know how many of your listeners are familiar with Oregon's dead zone, but it's a phenomenon that has been happening here in Oregon since 2002. And what it is essentially an area off the Oregon coast from about Cape Lookout, which is north of Lincoln City, down to just south of Florence now, from the shoreline to about 5 miles out, where the Oregon State University oceanography team has photographed the ocean floor there and just found it littered with dead sea life, dead crab, dead, you know, seals, just dead sea life. And they can't really explain what's going on in that area. Reports as of late have just kind of shrugged it off as, well, maybe it's climate change and we don't know. But I do find it kind of odd, and I think what compelled me to document this was the idea of, could these lights be emitting something in those streams that are flowing into the ocean there? Could this be something that's related to that? I don't know if it's extraterrestrial. I do know that I've never seen lights do what I have seen on the mountain there. They appear suddenly, they leave suddenly, they form patterns. They appear in different colors. I realize this sounds like I'm on some sort of weird trip. I can assure you I'm not in any way.
Well, I can assure you that you're in a very friendly environment here, and you don't have to worry about that, because people that listen to my show hear these sorts of things like this, you know, quite often. So you don't have to worry about that. Nobody thinks you're nuts here.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that from your listeners, too. I really have to say I've thought about it. I think it very well could be, but I just don't have the evidence that says so. And as a journalist, and Angela, you're a journalist, it's hard for us to really just say, yes, that's what it is. I've always
because
been
we look for the logic.
we're looking for
something logical.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I've tried to make it logical, and in some of the post-traumatic sessions I've done, we've tried to make it logical. And a few of the things that I experienced, we have no explanation for them. I just kind of have to let that go and just, you know, say, hey, I don't know what it is. And be okay with that for now until people with greater minds and greater resources and scientific backgrounds can really go up there and see for themselves and get more concrete evidence to your point.
I think so, too. Now, Jamie, do you feel like these experiences have changed your life?
Yes. Most definitely.
How so?
Well, I think it's really affected my life. Not for the better, per se. I really struggled with it for a long time. As I told you, I lost a lot of sleep over it. I really doubted myself. I didn't understand kind of what I was seeing, and it just made me question a lot. What it really makes you question is, you know, our very existence, really. And if this were related to something extraterrestrial, what does this mean? It has affected me terribly, and also in a good way, in that I think it's helped me sort of cope, and to certainly through writing, I found some real peace there. I found a cathartic way to release it, as it were.
Okay, Jamie, is there anything else you would like to add?
I think that, and I don't know if you plan to have Bob on the show. I think
Bob's going to be on the show.
Great. I think that he's really introduced me to something that we cannot explain, that has really bonded a lot of us on that crew in a way that that I can't even explain. When you experience something like that with a group of people, it profoundly affects you. I will tell you this, it made me really appreciate people who have talked about sightings. I've always had an open mind to it. I've always agreed that there's something bigger than us out there. But I certainly have a much more open mind to it all now. And for those of you who support people who talk about it, such as myself, I can't thank you enough for that. There's nothing worse than kind of being alone out there in your thoughts and feelings about something bigger than ourselves, something beyond us here on Earth. And I think that the possibilities are endless in terms of what this could mean. But I also think, regardless, it's a fascinating thing that all of us should really look into and explore, regardless.
Well, I agree with you totally. I think, you know, people do need to meet other people for support, you know, because you do feel alone when you've seen something and you're not sure what it is or how it could occur. And, you know, there's one place that's real good for that, I will tell you this, it's called Open Mind Forum, Jamie. And it's on the net. Like-minded people just discussing things just like what you and I have discussed. I have a board there for my show, and these people reached out to me from Open Mind Forum right after the Stephenville event. And so I joined them there, and it helped me figure out some things. Of course, you know, I by no means have it all figured out either. But I do appreciate you coming on the show, and I appreciate you sharing your experience. I have a feeling that we'll be talking some more after this.
Absolutely, and I thank you for the time, and I thank your listeners for tuning in.
All right. Thank you, Jamie.
Thanks.
Jamie McDowell, she is the founder and executive producer of Vertical Studios. And you can go to www.verticalstudios.net. Look at her bio. This is somebody that is not a squeamish woman. I mean, she has done a lot of things, and she has had a terrific experience that really rocked her world. And it's really something that I saw something there too. My husband saw it with me. And the sad part is, here we are, we've got about 4 minutes left. And I didn't judge the time period very well here. But I'm going to ask my husband, Randall Joyner, to come on now. Randall, are you with me?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. Randall is going to tell you something that he saw that I didn't see. Now, we were picked up by Bob at the airport, and we had to be driven a distance to get where we needed to go. So during this time, Bob pulled over and said, look at that, look at that, look at that. Now, Randall, you tell them that story and what happened. We got about 4 minutes.
Well, I was coming from the airport to his house, coming to the mountains. And everything said, usually see something in this area here going through the mountains. And as we was going on, kept going. And all of a sudden, he says, there he is. So they pull over. And sure enough, we got out. I was trying to get Angela out, but the door opened on that van. So Sure enough, I looked up, it's right over us. It couldn't have been 50 foot, 75 foot above us, whatever. Might have been a little taller, I don't know, but we was right under it, and it went over us. I could never hear no sound from this thing. It looked like some kind of craft, and we watched it, couldn't watch it in the morning. It's heading directly what he told me prior to this. He's seen more in this area. I should go off. Never get no sound from it. Usually, you see a plane, man, I hear no sound for a while, but finally, when it gets off from me, you hear sound. I didn't hear the sound. I couldn't see if it was a cockpit or what, but it was some kind of craft went over. No sound at all.
No, and it was completely silent.
Completely silent, yeah.
And as low as it was, do you feel like you should have heard something?
Oh, yeah. Could have heard something or felt something from that. Yeah, I didn't really feel no, you know, from the engines or nothing or whatever what was powering it. That's
and
what
tell the listeners the shape and the lights that you saw.
Well, the shape was similar to a craft, like an airplane, but it was nothing like I've seen before. You know, I've seen aircraft. Some of the areas I've been in forward, I could see the pilots in the craft. About 500 foot, you know. But we took about 100, so they came right over us. So I should have heard something, seen something. There's a dark colored craft, I could tell.
It was a dark colored craft. Did you see any lights? And speak up a little. They're having trouble hearing you.
No, I didn't see no visible lights up then. I could see the craft real well. Like they go down, they just kind of, I've seen them fly over me before, and it, you know, rumbly, and you feel a build off the jets over us around here in Yurok County.
Okay. Let me explain to the listeners. One reason that Randall saw this and I didn't see it is because Bob drives an old van, and it's not in the best of shape. He uses a piece of ski rope on his door handle to get his door open, and Randall was riding in the front with Bob. I was in the back, and I was trying to get the side door open, and Randall's looking up at the thing, and I'm screaming, get me out, get me out, I can't get the door open. And by the time Randall can get me out, it's gone. So I didn't see this. This was something that Randall and Bob saw. Now, I think I'm out of time now, and you know, I was thinking I was going to do two shows on this, and I was going to bring Bob on next week, and he's going to use his full name, and Frank Warren was going to be on with us. Frank has had several conversations with Bob, but it looks like probably that the next show will be Randall and I, and we will talk about what it was exactly that we saw in this very black forest. And like Jamie said, it's just unbelievable dense foliage. It's very, very dark. It's so dark that when I would be walking down the road and Randall was behind me, if I stopped, he ran into me. So it's unfortunate that I have misjudged the time here. And I'll get with Bob and Frank Warren, and we will talk about, you know, what we're going to do. It looks like we're going to be doing three shows instead of two on this. Now, I will tell you that we have sent some photos to Tonio Cousin in France, and I work with him often, and he is looking at this some stuff and doing some analysis, and hopefully I will, you know, he'll have that done, and I can report on that also. Now, it's you know, I've always said that honest people make honest mistakes, but you know, whatever you think of it, you know, that's, you draw your conclusion. I don't know, you know, what's going on in that part of the world. It's going to take, like, just like Jamie said, it's going to take somebody with more resources, more smart, more whatever, to really get a handle on it and figure out what's going on. So, okay, I just want to say so many people in the chat room now, this is great. We've got 51 people. That's fabulous. And I'm looking forward to continuing this discussion. We will be back next week, and I look forward to talking with you then. Good night, everybody.